11 minutes past 12 on Friday. Welcome to the Windrush Business Lunch. I don't know what you're eating for lunch. My turkey sandwich awaits at the end. Mark Hamrick is the Washington Bureau Chief and Senior Economic Analyst for Bankrate.com, somebody I've known for a long time. He joins us on the show today to talk about the economy, jobless claims. There are so many things that I want to talk to you about. Mark, welcome back to WGN.
Elise, it's great to reconnect with you in this space. Thanks for having me on.
It's nice to have you here. All right, so let's start with jobless claims. We saw a slight drop for elevated claims. It's bugging me, and it probably bugs you too, that we're comparing these as apples to apples, even though there's a new way of calculating that's only been in place for the last couple of weeks, right?
Sure, and you know, this gets to the occasionally mind-numbing aspect of seasonal adjustment, and the Labor Department basically made some adjustments that are, at the end of the day, intended to improve the quality of the data. And the appearance of conflict between this data and the monthly employment report that tends to generate the biggest headlines of the month that gave us the 8.4% national unemployment rate earlier this month was the source of a question this very week at the Federal Reserve News Conference held by Chairman Jerome Powell that I was among the virtual attendees of. And I think, you know, his takeaway is an excellent one, and it's just, you know, coincides with my view of the situation as well, and that is, you know, for Wall Street traders or those who are basically, you know, trying to play the tick of the market, you know, on a minute-by-minute basis, those nuances are very important. But what we ultimately have to take away is that, you know, the job market has basically recovered about half of the jobs that it lost earlier this year, March and April, 22 million jobs. Jobless claims tell us that the extent of continuing or new joblessness is still historically elevated, but we did see some improvement, and that included in the state of Illinois, where we saw a decline of 2,100 new claims on the sort of baseline number to 23,000, and similarly, the fourth month among 26 since we had these heightened levels of joblessness where this sort of baseline number was below a million. But, you know, I think what people want to focus on is where are we in the recovery, and Chairman Powell said that recovery has gained some momentum over the past couple of months. But having said that, we're now seeing some signs that maybe the recovery is beginning to wane just a bit here as we get deeper into the fall, and there are all kinds of reasons to be concerned about that, you know, because we're obviously, you know, getting toward the time when we're hoping that we'll have safe and effective vaccines. The presumption is that'll help us to improve even further, but we know we're a long way away from that, whether it's the medical solution or the economic reality of the moment.
Well, we have to take a short break, but I want to follow up with you when we come back with today. I mentioned this just before we started the show, that St. Louis Federal Reserve President James Bullard today talked about how we're going to have this blowout third quarter of growth never before seen. I get so nervous when federal officials start talking like this, but I want to talk to you about that when we come back. Elise Glink sitting in for John Williams today. You can find me online at thinkglink.com. Sign up for my free weekly newsletter or bestmoneymoves.com if I can help you with financial wellness. So here's how Americans say their finances have changed since Trump took office. 2 in 5 Americans say their finances have stayed the same, according to Bankrate's latest survey. And 40% say, sorry, 1 in 4 say their finances have gotten worse, 26% report improvement, and about 8% said they didn't know how to rate their situation over the past 3.5 years. I don't know, Mark, I feel like that kind of confusion is pretty common these days. Mark Hamrick, who is the Washington Bureau Chief and Senior Economic Analyst for Bankrate.com, joining me here on the line today. What do you think?
It's absolutely a hashtag 2020 thing, right? And it also speaks to the division that we have in this country across so many different quarters, whether you look at the economic divide, the political divide, the cultural divides. And so it may well be that there's going to be some cheerleading in this space where some people answer to the survey that, yes, you know, I'm a Trump supporter, and by golly, my finances are better. And we also, you know, get, I think, a hint of that when we ask people who they would prefer for their personal finances, where in our survey, and this is meant to basically replicate the American population of adults, 39% said Biden would be better for their personal finances, 35% said Trump, and 15% said don't know, and then 11% said neither one. And that's on the issue of personal finances alone. So that is not necessarily exactly the same question as saying who they might intend to vote for if they will vote. And by the way, you know it's making sort of video content today that we do have early voting starting today in three states. And so when, you know, I'm sort of have this antiquated idea that, you know, about election day, but this is actually now a time of year when people can be voting, and that'll actually be the case with mail-in ballots, absentee ballots as well.
I got to tell you, I'm so happy that voting has finally started, because I, like probably most people in this country, am already sick of the presidential election. All of it. I just have had it. I don't know. Maybe that's just me, and I, you know, get to report on it. But I do want to point out that, you know, in your story this week, you talk about how there are 30 million claims that were still seen across all programs. The pandemic unemployment assistance, that PUA, had nearly 660,000 new claims this week. So even though unemployment seems to be down, overall, if you've got 30 million claims, isn't that still roughly like 20% of all people who work in this country?
Well, that's a huge number for sure. And one point that is difficult to distill here, but I do think it needs to be made, is, you know, I've been fortunate to be able to weigh in on the importance of these elevated claims numbers basically since they began in mid to late March. And we do need to be talking about them because it's the closest thing to real-time data that we have on the job market that's available during this critically important time. But it's also important to note that it is not the government's intention to use this number as essentially a benchmark on the health of the job market, or to try to measure what unemployment is. That's the purpose of the monthly employment report as well. And I'll be talking about all of them, and I think they all should be, you know, lumped together. And it does tell you that the level of stress and pain that's out there right now remains extremely elevated, and that there's still a long way to go on the financial healing of our country and our economy, which is why we shouldn't be checking any boxes off at this point to say mission accomplished on that count.
Yeah, right. Nobody should get on an aircraft carrier with a banner at the moment, right?
Exactly.
Let's just hold off on that for a moment. One of the things that's interesting to me is the fight going on in D.C. right now between the Democrats, Pelosi, who said that she's willing to give another $2.2 trillion in help, and the Republicans who are like, no way, we're only going to a little over a trillion. That's a big difference. I know, you know, we throw around billion as if it's a dollar bill these days, but trillion still seems to matter to people. How do you see the two sides coming together? Because this is really serious economic relief that I think could be so helpful right now.
Sure. And, you know, the president has signaled that he'd be willing to go a number of steps higher than where the Senate Republicans were willing to go. And I think, you know, he would just like to have something done. That sort of, you know, would be a sign that Washington is closer to functional, at least with respect to one transaction, so to speak. And Pelosi, as you noted, has basically come down from what the House approved in May. It was above $3 trillion. The other part is that we still have to fund the government past October 1st, and I think there are some promising signs. Right now, these sides, and if you count the sides as White House, Senate, and House, they are sort of talking at one another. They don't appear to be talking with one another just yet, but they do seem to be getting closer to singing tunes that are closer to harmony, even though there is some noise still associated with it.
Yeah, I think it's really an issue, and I know that each side is sort of dug in and really don't want to go to the middle, which I think is where all of us would like everybody to sit right now, is in the middle and not be on the extremes. But where, you know, when you look at the, are you encouraged by where we are with keeping the government open? Because I would think that to have the government shut down in October would just be, at this point, devastating to the economic progress we have made.
Well, if you wanted another sign that government isn't working well in the United States of America right now, that would be another sign of that. And, you know, I took great hope from the fact that we had our divided political parties agreeing earlier in the year on several rounds of legislation where, you know, months out from the election, they were willing to do something for the sake of the American people rather than, as is too often the case, really trying to protect the interests of their own parties. But that was May,
and we haven't had
much since then. Yeah, it feels like an ice age in political time right now.
Yeah, no, I think that's really true. Just quickly, you know, your take on what St. Louis Federal Reserve President James Wellard said this morning, where we could end up with the biggest quarter in U.S. business history.
Well, you have to benchmark that against where we're coming from, and you benchmark that against the fact that we had a historic annualized decline of GDP in the second quarter, nearly 32%. For those who don't follow this stuff that closely, that means we're basically taking a quarter's number, multiplying by four, and getting a number for the full year that's not truly accurate for the full year. Yes. It's a little like a football team being behind by, let's say, something ridiculous, 9 touchdowns, and then bragging that they scored 6 but still lost the game, because by the end of the year, output will still be behind where it was when we entered into the pandemic and the downturn.
But it's coming back a little bit faster than I think some people thought, yes?
I think for the last 60 days, yes, and we'll take any positive momentum that we can get, absolutely.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Mark Hambrick, Washington Bureau Chief and Senior Economic Analyst for Bankrate.com. It's so nice to chat with you again. Thanks for joining us today.
My great pleasure, Elise. Thanks so much. You take good care.
Thank you. See you soon, I hope, if we ever get to see each other at conferences ever again. It is 12:28 almost on News Talk 720 WGN. We'll be back in a moment with more of the Wintrust Business Lunch. Elise Klink sitting in for John Williams on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you so much for joining us today. This morning, the Federal Reserve Board issued an update to its report on the economic well-being of U.S. households. And I wanted to give you some good news, because this is data that's been collected to supplement the Federal Reserve Board's 7th annual survey. And what it showed, and the reason they're doing this update is because of obviously what's going on with COVID and what Mark and I just talked about, Mark Hamrick from Bankrate, there has been such a swing economically this year, you know, with 7 or 8% unemployment at the worst of it, now starting to build back, and we're doing okay. We're at 8.4%. Not okay, right? Especially if you're one of those people. And 30 million people who are collecting some form of unemployment this week. But it showed overall that the survey of household economics and decision making, U.S. families are faring better financially in July than in April, but many are still quite uncertain regarding layoffs and their prospects for actually getting back to work. And so the survey was conducted at the beginning in April, right at the start of the pandemic. It was before most of the relief efforts were in place. And people were really struggling. They were scared and struggling. But by July, when the second survey went into effect, 77% of adults said they were doing at least okay financially. That was up from 72% in early April and up even from a year ago in October when it was 75%. And in analyzing the data, the Fed said it looks like the increase is due to people returning from work, but also these assistance programs, all of these different assistance programs, everything from the PUA, which is for people who don't even qualify normally for unemployment, to the forbearance programs that we've talked about that were part of the CARES Act, to the extra $600 a week that was incredibly helpful to millions and millions of people who had been suddenly laid off. And so what the July survey demonstrated is that people were better able to handle small financial emergencies than they were even 9 months prior. So in July, this is a really important number, 70% of Americans said they would be able to pay an unexpected $400 emergency entirely by using cash, savings, or a credit card that would be paid off at the next statement. The last time they did that survey, 63% of people said they'd be able to. So now it's 70%, and a year ago, before the pandemic, it was only 63% who would be able to pay an unexpected $400 emergency expense with cash, savings, or a credit card that they'd pay off. That doesn't mean that everybody's hunky-dory and everything's okay. What it says to me is somebody who is deeply involved in the financial wellness space and watching how people spend their money, that these programs, by and large, have worked as a Band-Aid to really get people through this pandemic. There are problems, right? So we have a huge multi-trillion dollar debt bubble that has now been put in place, right? It's not that this has been free. We're going to have to pay this bill at some point in time. But owing that money at what are historic low interest rates, right? We are just had our ninth lowest mortgage interest rate of the year, ninth lowest historic of all time, right? So interest rates are low. Fed says they're going to stay low. We've borrowed this money at the cheapest possible time. But what we've done is we seem to have kept tens of millions of Americans from literally going under financially. And that is just something that is really amazing. We're not out of the woods yet. It's true that the survey also showed that more people think their temporary layoffs are going to be permanent. We certainly, you know, heard it earlier in the hour, last hour from Tom Tunney, who is the 44th Ward Alderman, who talked about how seriously concerned he is about restaurants and their ability in his neighborhood to be able to survive this. We're not out of the woods, and I don't want anybody to think that I'm saying that, but what I'm saying is that it seems that people are able to hold it together a little bit better, and that is the result of that $3 trillion that came through. And hopefully, we're going to see a little bit more of that for another round of stimulus. But it is really heartening to see from the Federal Reserve Bank that things are doing okay. It's 12:41. Here's Steve Grzanich with the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The city of Chicago is trying to fill an $800 million budget shortfall, and the city's budget director says job vacancies in all departments are under review. That includes the Chicago Police Department, where some positions may remain unfilled through next year. CPD has about 800 sworn vacancies. City Council's financial analyst proposed $55 million in potential savings from the police department alone. Chicago's Manufacturing Tech Innovation Center, M-Hub, wins a grant from the federal government. The $1.3 million grant from the U.S. Economic Development Administration will allow M-Hub to grow its product development services program, which connects corporate companies to M-Hub talent. Nuveen staff will not return to its offices until 2021. The company founded in Chicago says its operations have fared well with staff working remotely. Nuveen is the investment arm of retirement services giant TIAA. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Everybody to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Link. It's been so fun to fill in for John this week. Next week he'll be back. You can find me online, though. It's not like I'm hard to find. And in fact, thinklink.com, thinklink.com, or bestmoneymoves.com, where we look at a lot of the financial wellness stuff. But I also want to give you a chance in the next couple of minutes. We have an open segment. I'm going to talk a little bit about benefits that employees are valuing for 2021. We're almost at open enrollment season. But if you've got a quick question or comment, 312-981-7200. We sometimes blow through a lot of this financial stuff on the show, and we have our experts in. And, you know, it's confusing. And Here I am. I'm giving you, information that 8.5% of people are unemployed and 30 million took on those benefits. And yet I'm also saying at the same time, there's an improvement in how much people are able to spend and what kind of cash that they can get their hands on. So I'm game. Any kind of financial question that you want to ask over the next few minutes, we've got a few minutes here. I'm going to talk about these benefits, but 312-981-7200 is our number here. We got an email to the show about yesterday we were talking about home inspector nightmares. I don't know if you caught this part of the show yesterday. It was sort of funny. I was talking about how when I bought my first house, we didn't test the dishwasher, and I didn't know that it was, the reason that the water was off to the dishwasher was because it leaked all over. And we found that out on the morning after we moved in and had run a load of dishes at night, went to sleep, and in the morning, faced the angry neighbor downstairs banging on the door, boom, boom, boom. So I got an email just now, from our producer Pete, who said, this person woke in, "Elise, I'm a second shift worker, so I normally only catch the tail end of John's normal show, but I caught the replay overnight. I have home inspector nightmare that blows away everyone you talked to yesterday. Garage roof support damage, house roof rotted out, main floor sagging 3% on support posts that were not secured to anything. Repair costs are up 100% of the purchase price, and we haven't even finished because we ran out of money." Oh, my God, my heart breaks for you. Thank you for sharing that. It is, when I write about first-time home buyer things, right, and what could be more exciting than buying your very first house, except maybe paying off your house, which for everybody who's ever experienced that 30 years later after the mortgage is done, boy, that feels good too. But move into a house, you spent almost every single dime to get in that house and to make it work, and then something like that happens where a home inspector misses a bunch of stuff and the seller is not a good person and they've hidden it. Oh, wow. That's just heartbreaking. So sorry about that. I have, I got an email from somebody who listened to the show yesterday also, whose son has been looking for a job for a long time, and she wanted to know, would I take a quick look at his resume? And she sent that along. And, we haven't really talked a lot about resumes, but there's something going on right now that you may or may not be aware of, that most companies, even smaller companies, are using automated talent systems, ATS, that take a look at resumes electronically. They basically scan with artificial intelligence. They read the resume and then they look for keywords to match with the job that's open. And if the keywords match, then they push the resume forward for a real live person to look at. Or if in the case of a really huge company where they might get 10,000 resumes in a day, they might have a second round of that. In any case, this woman sent me the resume, and I realized that it's a resume that is very old-fashioned. What I mean by that is it doesn't have a lot of keywords. It's not keyword-heavy. And what was interesting is that this young person, he was in his early 20s, actually is a computer science person. He's a programmer, and he should have known that this is how resumes are getting read these days. And so my advice back to her is, hey, you should really think about having your son rewrite this so that it's keyword heavy at the top with what he can do. And then, of course, you always want to position yourself in the best possible way in the resume, showing all of the things you have done. And if you have a gap, like I think this person also had a bit of a gap, show what you did during that year or two. Right now, a lot of us have had gaps in employment, right? Because we've been out of work. There's been this pandemic. And to a great extent, today, everybody knows that the pandemic is causing massive disruption in employment. But, a year or two from now, they may not remember that these are the months that were the worst, or this year you had to take a gap year. And so what you want to do is make sure that your resume fully reflects all of the different things you were doing. And if you're just looking for a job, then maybe you take a temporary job if you can get one as a contact tracer, or maybe you volunteer somewhere so that you don't have a two-year gap, or if you've gone back to school or you've done the Google online education program. make sure that that all makes it back into your resume. And then finally, we look at Best Money Moves, we're always looking at HR trends. And with open enrollment season coming up, we're talking to a lot of companies about how do you add financial wellness in and how do you make this in a time when so many people are really hurting, you know, how do you bring this to your employees? And it turns out that financial wellness is the number one thing that employees want. They really value having, you know, their employer think about their money, helping them understand how to make the most of it. And yet, when it comes to benefits, that doesn't always translate. And so the benefits and services that employers are bringing to their benefit plans to help close that gap, they're adding in employee assistance programs this year, more paid time off, more wellness benefits, including financial wellness. They're adding in a lot of behavioral and mental health services because people are just desperately needing some help there. Critical illness insurance is now popping up as something that they want to plug in. Paid time off for volunteering. We just let everybody in our offices who wanted to, we said, you know, if you want to volunteer as a poll worker, we know there are shortages. Typically, people who are poll workers are older. They're more at risk for catching COVID. And so there's a real lack of poll workers across the country right now. So we said to our people, if you want to do that, we're happy to let you go ahead and do that. And so we're giving them paid time off for volunteering as a poll worker. And of course, student loan repayment plans are very popular, as you might imagine, paid sabbaticals and pet insurance. So, all of those things may make it into your workplace and you should look for it. And if you haven't checked your benefits in a while, you might want to do that. 85% of people never look at their benefits after year one and, or even after day one, but you may want to turn the page and look at the rest of it because I'm sure your life is different right now. The benefits your company is providing is different. And with open enrollment, you want to make sure you make the very best and smartest choices that you can. All right. Well, it is 12:57. Thank you so much for hanging out with me the last couple of days. I will be back on Monday as John's guest. Pete Zimmerman has been our producer for this hour, and Elif Jaris did the honors for 9 to 12. Delightful to spend some time with you. I hope you had a great lunch, and Anna DeVlantes is coming up next.